So we're also on Daf Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph. See where we can. So yesterday we spoke about Hahi Savta. Do you remember the old elderly lady who was yelling and screaming? Rav Nachman told her get lost, basically, because he said she has no claim to the wood, because the wood was already acquired by the Gazlan. You know, the Avodim, the servants of the Reish Galusa had stolen, I assume inadvertently, but in any event, they stole these, so Mike, I'm just giving you a summary of what I did yesterday, so I'll tell you in about 5 minutes where you can clue in for the new sugya for today. Okay then? So we're on Daf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, and we're just reviewing the highlights of yesterday's discussion. If you steal... Oh, wait a second, Mike, you were here yesterday. Oh, I skipped a day. Okay, I'm sorry, I skipped a day. You weren't here, but today is what, Tuesday?
Monday.
Today is Monday. Oh, so you missed? Oh, you missed the second show. Okay, that's right. Okay,
I wasn't here yesterday.
Okay, fine. So, David, you need this chazor. So somebody stole wood and then used it, believe it or not, for schar. And the Gemara establishes that in that case, the person who's sitting in the sukkah fulfills his mitzvah of sukkah, even though we hold like Rabbi Eliezer at this point. Rabbi Eliezer holds that when it says in the pasuk lecha, it means that you have to own the sukkah. I can't invite you into my sukkah. You have to own the sukkah. That's Rabbi Eliezer's shita. Do you need a gemara?
Is this one?
That one should be free, as far as I can tell.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, let me give the summary and then ask all your questions. Okay. So the summary is as follows. Let's say, hi Jerry, how you doing? Let's say that Shimon stole Reuven's wood, and Shimon, the thief, the Gazlan, used it for what? For schach. So the Gemara establishes that Shimon, in such a case, surprisingly, can be yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah. And the Gemara asks the following question: according to Rabbi Eliezer, you need ownership over the sukkah. That's how Rabbi Eliezer dashes the word lecha, sukkah's teshvu lecha. And Gemara says that he was kone the eitzim. He made an acquisition of the eitzim. How so? So Rashi says that before it was called eitzim, and now it's called schach. It changed its name. That's called shinui hashem. And as a result, the Gazlan is kone. Now he has full acquisition. The Rishonim here go to town because they don't understand what happened to Mitzvah Bob Avera. That's another issue. But in any event, the Gemara tells us that in a case where the Gazlan steals wood and he uses it as schach, which means it's part of the structure of the sukkah, in such a case, the Nigzal has no recourse to get back his stolen wood. Why? Because the Gazlan was kone the wood. And that kinyan removes what's called the chiyuv hashava, the responsibility of the heishiv sagzela shargaza. Does that mean that the nigzal is out in the street, so to speak? He has no recourse whatsoever. What would you say about that?
He gets the money. Back.
Exactly. He can demand money, but he can't demand the original object that was stolen. And the Gemara says that this is based on something called takonas morish, which I wrote here on the whiteboard. And if you don't have it in your notes, you should just make a little note on the side. Takonas Marish means that the Chachamim made a takana, and they instituted a new halacha, which is based on the authority of Bezdin in Dine Mavinus. That's called Hefker Bezdin. Hefker, we're not going to go into that now. And they instituted the following, that even though the Torah says that when you steal something, you have to return it, the Chachamim made a takana that under the following conditions, you don't have to return it. You just have to pay its value. Condition number one is that it was a material, and condition number two, that material was built into a structure. So instead of requiring what the Torah would require, that the Gazlan, the thief, take apart his structure, he dismantled this building in order to return the wood that he stole. The Chacham made a takonis marish. The word marish means a korah, in Hebrew. Korah means a beam, and in Aramaic it's called a marish, and they institute the following takana that now the nigzal whose beam was stolen no longer has recourse to get back his beam from the gazlan, because the gazlan made a kinyan on the beam, and in such a case we don't require that the gazlan take apart the structure in order to return that which he stole. He can keep it, and that's it. So the Gemara says, how does that apply to the case of a sukkah? Bishleim, I understand, in the case of a structure, you're going to ask the gazlan to take apart a structure. Imagine he's a kaplan. Okay, in this country, the word kaplan has various associations. I'm not going to go into that right now. It's the guy who drives around in a fancy Volvo, you know what I'm saying? But in any event, if the gazlan is going to have to take apart the whole building, you know, you invested so much energy and so much money in constructing the building, albeit with stolen beams, but if he has to take it apart, then he's not going to come forward. It's going to be very hard to get a hold of him. He's not going to confess. He's going to try to evade the law. So in order to encourage him that at least he won't have to take apart his structure, they made this takon. But in the case of a sukkah, what happens with this schach at the end of 7 days? So the Gemara says he's going to take apart his sukkah. He doesn't leave his schach on all year round. And therefore, in this case, takonis marish doesn't apply. Now, just want to add one word to this whole concept. But again, I don't know if this concept that I'm about to present to you is going to confuse you or make life easier for you, because this concept is a very profound concept that has to be understood. I'll say to you in Aramaic, in fancy Aramaic, it's milsa delo shchicha lo gazru ve'rabbana. Does anybody know what that means? Can anybody help me out here? Milsa delo shchicha lo gazru ve'rabbana.
Something that's not common or found?
Correct. If it's something that's not common, it's not included in the rabbinic enactments. So for example, I'll give you just one example. This is the shita of Rav Moshe Feinstein about chol of stam. You know, you're not allowed to drink milk that doesn't have supervision because we're afraid maybe it's not coming from a cow or something or other. So Rav Moshe Feinstein claims that in the case where the legal strictures and laws in any particular state or country are so severe that a person, if he got caught substituting camel's milk or pig's milk for cow's milk, he would lose his license. So that's not included in the original gzeira. So that's called milsa delo shchicha. It's a very unusual case, because again, today we know that there are laws in the West, you know, about mixing things that are not. But in the old days, you know, to have governmental control, that was so unusual, and therefore it wasn't included in the original gzeira. Sukkah is not included in the gzeira of takanis marish, because it's so unusual that a gazlan, a thief, would steal beams and use it as schach, that therefore the nigzal, the victim of this theft, has recourse to get back his beams. And when the gazlan says to him, well, I don't have to do so, that's a real hassle for me to take apart the sukkah, so the rabbanan will answer him, that's not such a hassle, because what were you going to do anyway at the end of the sukkah? You know, there's some people keep their schach up the whole year round. It's not a good idea.
So that's
okay, now I'll take questions. That's just yesterday's class before we start today's sukkah.
Yeah, but during sukkah, during the 7 days, he would be required to take it down. He might be required to return it.
Using this
principle or a different principle that he keep it for the 7 days and then return it?
Well, during the 7 days, we're going to use this principle only because it's a tremendous tircha
for him to take it down.
Ask him to take it down during the chag and forfeit the mitzvah.
But that wasn't my original question. It's you triggered something when you started. It's not specific what you said today, but you said someone rules even that you can't on the first day. You can't even use a bar at sukkah. Is that correct?
Correct. That's really is.
So, but do we hold by that?
No, because
I know you're invited to people's sukkah the first day of sukkah.
So. Absolutely. Oh, okay. So, Don, you know, at the end of my second shiur, in theory, it doesn't always happen. I want to learn Mishnah Berurah. That's going to happen eventually. It's just that we're getting started and we want to get our feet ground. But once we do so, I would like to dedicate the last 20 minutes of our shiur, which would be at about 10 to 1 or 5 to 1, to learning Mishnah Berurah. So you'll see in the Mishnah Berurah, which it's not the Mishnah Berurah's chiddush, it's the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch Paskins like the Chacham, that we don't require ownership over a sukkah. And it's interesting because the Gemara back on Daf Chav Zayin in the previous perek derives that from a pasuk called Ezrach B'Yisrael Yeshvu Basukos. And the Chazal say that what does it mean called Ezrach B'Yisrael? That you can fit the entire nation of Israel into one sukkah. Now clearly, no one could claim that he owns that sukkah. And even if he claims he's a partner in the sukkah, he has less than what's called a shava pruta. He doesn't have a pruta's worth, a bit of an amount. So to make life easy for ourselves, we're just going to assume that based on the pasuk called Ezrach B'Yisrael, the Chachamim derived the conclusion that Lecha does not generate a positive requirement, a condition in sukkah of ownership. It only comes to exclude a stolen sukkah. Now, when can a sukkah be stolen? Lechora, there's no such thing as a stolen sukkah. Why? Because mimarefshav, no matter how you slice the cake. If I throw you out of your own sukkah, that's called karka ain't an exelis. Again, I'm just reviewing what we learned yesterday. There's no such thing as gzela on karka, on real estate. And if you'll tell me he stole the wood and he used it for schach, then we have the principle of takonis marish. And therefore he doesn't have to return that schach, he makes an absolute acquisition on the schach, and therefore it's not a sukkah gzula. So what is a sukkah gzula? And to answer that question, you have to either be a Lubavitcher, or you have to appreciate what Lubavitch does on sukkahs. And what's that?
The mobile
sukkah. So the mobile sukkah, which is called in the language of Chazal, sukkah al gabi agola, agala in modern Hebrew, right? Where you have a mobile sukkah, that's the case where if I throw the guy out of the truck and I take over the sukkah in that truck, that's called a sukkah gzula. That's the only case under the heavens where the Chachamim agree that the Pasuk Lecha teaches me anything. If not for the case of Lubavitcher sukkahs, we would not need the word Lecha. If you follow my point. Okay, all this is a review of what we did yesterday, and now we start a new sugya today. Want to join us?
I was just thinking, I saw someone go out there.
Hey. How do you know Mendel?
Long story.
Long story. Okay. You met at 770. No, just kidding. No, we had a couple over for Shabbos Friday night. And when we're getting to know them, and we asked them, how did they meet? We met at 770. Okay. So we're on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, then. And we're going to start the sugya after the old lady, if you know what I mean, and Ravina. And the first word in the line is dummy, which really isn't dummy, it's dme, actually, but that's not for us. We're going to start with the second word in that line, tana. You have that? So if you're counting from the bottom, I can't help you if you have a different kind of tzuras hadaf. It should be approximately, should we say 15 lines up or 20 lines up from the bottom?
20.
Ton. We're going to start from the word ton.
In the middle.
If anybody has it, please show the guy next to you.
I say it.
Tana Yavish.
I say it.
Okay. Again, what I'd love to encourage you, if you have your own Gemara, to bring a pencil, just a pencil. Some people are very mocked in not to write in a Gemara. But others are making it if it's a pencil because you can just erase it. So if you can write in your Gemara a little schmitzig, a little marker, so we'll know where to pick it up the next day. Okay, Tana. We have a Braisa. Tana always introduces a Braisa. Yavesh Pasul. If the lulav is completely dry, like last year's lulav, then it's Pasul. Now, the truth is that that's a repetition of what we learned, whoever was with me last Sunday when we started, in the first mission in this parak. The mission talks about lulav ha-gozel, a stolen lulav, and lulav ha-yavesh, and both are pasul. They're excluded. But here we have Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. So next time you see a person on Sukkot taking a dry lulav, accuse him of being a Rabbi Yehudiyid. He's a Rabbi Yehudiyid. Amar Rava, machlokes belulav. This debate only concerns the case of a lulav. Derabbanan Savri, according to the Shita of the Chachamim, they hold. Makshinon, we have what's called a hekesh, an equation between lulav and esrog. Just like the Pasuk says with regard to Esrog, how does the Torah describe an Esrog, Rabosai? Help me out here. Pre eats Hadar. Hadar means a beautiful fruit. It's got to have some sort of lachluchis. It has some sort of element of moisture to it. It's not all dried out. Is so too, when it says in the Pasuk Kapos Tmarim, in the same Pasuk which is a reference to the Lulav, you require what? You require that it have lachluchis to it. Correct? That's the Rabbanan Shita. That's based on what's called a Hekesh. What's a Hekesh? If you see two verses in the same context, you equate the two, and you derive halachas one from the other. Aval bi esrog, what about a dried up esrog? I would not recommend you to use last year's esrog, because I can guarantee you that last year's esrog was completely dried up. Divrei HaKol, meaning even Rabbi Yehuda, would maintain Hadar Be'inon. We have a requirement of Hadar. Why is Esrog a candidate for a psul, a disqualification of Yavesh, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even though Lulav HaYavesh is kosher? Don't all answer at once. Come on. Excellent, because the Pasuk describes the Esrog as pre-Eitz Hadar. But the Rabbanan say that even though the Pasuk describes the Esrog as pre-Eitz Hadar, we have a Hekesh. In the same Pasuk it says, Kapos Tmarim. So just like Esrog requires Hadar, it's got to be beautiful, which means it has to have some element of moisture to it. So too, the other three Minim, represented by the Lulav, require some sort of moisture, some minimum amount of moisture. And if it's totally dried out, then the Chachamim say it's possible. Which Minim are possible according to the Chachamim if they're dried out? Just one, two, three, four. You have four choices.
One.
All four. According to the Rabbanan, all four dried out. Any of the four dried out minimum possible, because the Torah says in Esrog pre-Eitz Hadar, and we have a Hekesh to equate all the other minim with Lulav. That's who Shita? The Rabbanan. But who denies that Hekesh? Rabbi Yehuda, he also, I don't buy into this Hekesh. The Torah requires Hadar in the case of Esrog exclusively. In the other medium, I don't require Hadar. Therefore, you have a Lulav Ayavesh, an old, you know, last year's dried out Lulav. You could use it and Tovolav Bracha, make a Bracha on it. So Rashi explains, and we saw it yesterday, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you cannot derive a Hekesh on your own. You must have what's called a Mesorah, a tradition for a Hekesh. In other words, Rashi, according to Rabbi Yehuda, places Hekesh in the same category as what's called a Gzeira Shava. And just like a Gzeira Shava, you have to have a Kabbalah. You have to have received it from your Rebbeim. Rabbi Yehuda never received the Hekesh. And if he didn't receive the Hekesh, then you don't have the Hekesh. And where the Torah defines the requirement of Hadar, that's where you require Hadar. And that's only in what? In Esrog. But with regard to the other minim, the Torah doesn't say pre-Eitz Hadar with regard to any of the other minim, and you can't introduce a Hekesh. The Rabbanan had the Hekesh. They received it in an unbroken chain back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Somehow in Rabbi Yehuda's tradition it got lost in the wayside, so Rabbi Yehuda never had the Hekesh. That's Rashi Shita. Tosis doesn't like Rashi, because Tosis has a proof that even Rabbi Yehuda, if you're talking about Kabbalah, he would agree that you don't need a Kabbalah for a Hekesh. Why? Because the Gemara establishes in Yevamos that there's something called Smichus HaParshios. That means you have two Parshios, two units in the Torah. Sometimes they're separated by what's called a Pei, as a Psucha. You won't see the Pei in the Sefer Torah, you'll see empty space. Sometimes it's a Stuma, and you won't see the space, but it's a different Parsha. And if you have what's called Smichus HaParshios, means you have two Parshios in the Torah, two sections that are contiguous, then we derive one from the other. We equate the two. So that here you have not only two parshios, but you have one pasuk, one verse. Menachem, that's where you gave me your explanation yesterday for Rabbi Yehuda going to Rashi. But Tosis says, at the very end of this Tosis, Rabbi Yehuda, which is right above the Tosis Ein Ogdim, Tosis says, Shema Kasavar, maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds the Shayach Loshen Hadar Ela Biperos. That the word Hadar only applies to a fruit. You can describe a fruit, a pri, as being Hadar. But a lulav, hadasim, aravos, those are not fruits. And they're not edible. And therefore, the word Hadar is totally inapplicable. And that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So we now have a summary here. According to Rava, the machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim revolves around an Esrog. As far as... I'm sorry. The other way around. The machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim revolves around the other minim. Lulav is the paradigm. But as far as the Esrog HaYovesh, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is possible, because the Torah describes an Esrog as pre-Eitz Hadar. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda go a step further and say that that requirement of Hadar should apply to the other minim? And the answer is because he doesn't have the Hekesh. So now the Gemara attacks Rava. And the Gemara says the following. Ubelulav lo boy Rav Yehuda Hadar. This is like a rhetorical question. Are you telling me, Rava, that in the case of Lulav, there's no requirement of Hadar? I'm going to prove to you that Rav Yehuda does require Hadar in Lulav. Which would mean, therefore, that he accepts what? The Hekesh. But now we have a Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ya'agdenu Milamala. That you take the lulav together with the hadasim and the arovas, and you do what's called agad, which means you have to what? Bind them together. The three have to be bound. Now keep in mind, Rabbi Ozai, that when Rabbi Yehuda says that Ya'agdenu Milamala, he's talking about the following case. We have what's called Nifridu Olav, which means that the branches, the leaves of the lulav got separated one from the other. If you want a picture of it, I have a picture of it. Anyway, Nifridu Olav means they got separated. So if Yehuda says that in order to use this lulav, you have to bind the lulav together in such a way that you collapse the olive, these leaves, up against the what's called the shidra. You remember we spoke about shidra, yeah. The spine, the middle main vertical piece of the S of the lulav. And the Gemara thinks now that there are two ways you could bind the lulav. One is by taking a piece off the lulav, one of the leaves of the lulav, and the Gemara thinks that that would beautify the lulav. And another is to take a cord, a rope, take a flax, you know, like you know those things that they use for esrogim. You know what I'm talking about? Those what are they called? They still use them. You know, you put the esrog in that
plastic today.
Plastic. So in the old days when I was a kid, they used to wrap up the esrog in something. So yellow. You know what I'm talking about?
I think it's flax or something.
No, it used to be flax. Yeah, I think it was flax, if I'm not mistaken. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein ogdin es halulav ela bimino. Mino means with a piece of lulav. And that I could use to bind it. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Just 1 second. I think, did I skip something? 1 second?
Yeah.
I think I skipped something. Okay, again, let's go over it one more time. Sorry, I apologize. I think I skipped it. Right. So wait a second. So I'm sorry, I skipped one piece of Gemara. So again, Rabbi Yehuda holds that a lulav requires what? Agat. And that means that it's absolutely critical to bind the lulav together with what? With the adasim and the aravos. Correct? Right? Just 1 second. So again, Belulav, Ubelulav Loboy Rabbi Yehuda Hadavat. Tanan, we have a mission that says Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yagdenu Milamala, that it's absolutely critical to bind the Lulav together with what? Together with the Esrog. And
together with the Hadasim
and the Arovos. By the way, do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? That a lulav requires binding?
No, we don't
paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. We paskin like the Chachamim. But we do binding anyway.
Some don't, in
Shulchan Aruch,
not everyone does.
Yeah, well, in Shulchan Aruch it says you should bind it with something.
What, they hold all three with their hands without binding?
I've never seen.
Yes, you're right. They use those
instead of kaishalok, they use something else.
They use those things.
Something. Because the Mishnah Brura says that the reason why we bind the three minim together is nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda. It has to do with something called zekeli
v'anvei. Yeah, no, I'm thinking
it beautifies
those,
the lulav.
They use those things as technically to bind them.
In any event, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you have to bind the three minim together, the lulav with the hadasim and the aravos. My timer, Why does Rabbi Yehuda require agad? The Torah doesn't specify that you have to bind them together. Lav mishum, in a rhetorical question, isn't it because the boy hadar? When you bind the three meaning together, it beautifies this lulav, and that means that it's what? It's hadar. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda does accept the requirement of hadar. And this is critical, because if he doesn't bind the three minim together, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the lulav is possible. He didn't fulfill his mitzvah. So Gemara says, lo. No, that's not why Rabbi Yehuda requires hadar. But rather, kidiktani taima, because we have a braisa that explains the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda. What underlies Rabbi Yehuda? And it says, Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Tarfon, kapos tmarim. The Torah says that lulav has to be kapos. And Rabbi Yehuda interprets the word kapos as kafus. Now watch what happens over here. There's a kri and a ksiv. There's Torah Shebetzav and Torah Shebalpeh. In the written Torah, it says kapos. Kapos means literally the hand, what's called a palm. Right? So you have to take a date palm. But if you change the vowels under the word kapos, you end up with the word kafus. Kafus, Rashi explains, it has to be totally bound. Like the Gemara says in Makos, that when you give 39 lashes, you take the hands of the person who's going to get lashes, and you do kafus, meaning you tie him down so that he doesn't jump around when you hit him. So the word kafus means it's got to be totally, totally closed. The imhaya parud, and if the leaves of the lulav got separated one from the other, yichfetenu, you bind them down. So it means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the leaves of a lulav have to be bound to the shidra, to the spine of the lulav, and that's derived from the pasuk kapos tmarim. Has nothing to do with the word what? Hadar. Everybody see that? So again, let's just summarize. Rav points out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the word hadar only applies to Esra. And therefore, in other minim, there's no requirement of hadar. The nafkamina is going to be that if you have a dried up lulav, according to Yehuda, it's kosher, he doesn't have the hekesh, and hadar is exclusively singled out for esrog. The Gemara thinks that in the case where the lulav got separated, you have to bind it together. Why? Because of hadar. That's Rabbi Yehuda's requirement of agad. The Gemara says no. Rabbi Yehuda's requirement of agad is not based on hadar, because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hadar and lulav, but rather it's based on kapos. Don't read it as kapos, read it as kafus. Kafus means it's bound. Now the Gemara is going to ask, what's Rabbi Yehuda going to say about agad? Can I use flax or rope of some sort to bind the three minim? And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you have to take a piece of lulav. So the Gemara says, Vilo boy hadar. Does Rabbi Yehuda not require hadar? For tonight we have a Mishnah that says, Ein ogdin es halulav, ela bi mino, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda requires that you use a piece of the lulav in order to bind together the three minim. My timer, why does he require a piece of lulav? Lav, is it not because mishum, because the boy hadar requires hadar? It means that you beautify the three minim when you take a piece of the lulav off and you use it for the binding. But if you use some foreign substance, like a rope, that's not going to beautify the three minim. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda does require hadar, and we're talking not about an esrog, we're talking about what? Hadar. A lulav. So you see that the requirement of hadar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, applies not just to esrog, but even to hadar.
Does that mean?
So the word says lo. No, you're misunderstanding it. Rabbi Yehuda requires that you use a piece of the lulav for binding, not because of hadar. And I'll prove it to you, says the Gemara D'Amar Rava. Rava says that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't have to use one of the leaves of the lulav in order to bind the minim together. Afilu b'siv. Okay, we'll talk about a siv. V'afilu b'ikra didikla. Okay, what's a siv? And what's an ikra didikla? A siv is a fiber that grows around the trunk of the palm tree. Again, I'll show you a picture of it. And that's that's certainly not hadar. I mean, again, it's part of the lulav tree. It's mimina lulav. It's, you know, the lulav tree has a trunk on the bottom of it. In fact, the trunk of a lulav tree looks a very specific way. We have pictures of it because I have a lulav tree in my backyard, but it's not a real lulav tree because you'll see the trunk of it. I'll bring you a picture of mine if I ever get a chance to take a picture. I'll send it to you on WhatsApp. And the trunk of my tree doesn't look at all like a trunk of a lulav tree, of the palm tree that's a lulav. Anyway, so you're allowed to take out this fiber from the base of the lulav tree and use it for wrapping it around, even though it doesn't beautify the lulav. The afilu, and even ikra didikla. Ikra didikla is called in Hebrew klipas hadekel, which means the roots of the date palm. And the roots, although they're mimin lulav, they're from the lulav tree, the palm tree, but nevertheless they don't look like the leaves of the lulav. So it really does look a little bit different. And from an aesthetic perspective, it doesn't have that beauty. So you haven't enhanced that beauty. And yet Rava says that Rabbi Yehuda holds, as long as it's mimin lulav, it somehow belongs to the lulav tree, then you could use it. That's not a hadar issue. If it was a hadar issue, then Rabbi Yehuda should have restricted the binding to a piece of the leaf. V'ela, but rather my time with Rabbi Yehuda Hassam. Why does Rabbi Yehuda require that you bind the lulav with something from the lulav tree, whether it be the leaves of the lulav tree, whether it be a fiber on the trunk of the lulav tree, whether it be the roots of the date palm tree? That's for a different reason. Because Savar, he holds lulav tzarich agad. Okay, what does this mean? Lulav has to be bound. Okay, lulav has to be bound. That's derived from the word kapos, which means kafus. It has to be bound. But v'imaisi mina achrina, if he takes a substance, like we spoke about a rope that's made of flax, and he uses it, that's called maisi, he takes mina achrina, a different min, and he uses that other min as a binding agent, havalahu, it becomes chamisha minim. Then what's in his hand now is a fifth min. And the Torah requires how many minim?
Four.
The magic number is four. It can't be less than four, and it can't be more than four. Like we read in the parasha just a few days ago, that the Torah says, lo tosif v'lo tigra. You're not allowed to add to the mitzvah, and you're not allowed to subtract from the mitzvah. If the Torah says four minim, then it cannot be three minim, and it cannot be five minim. And if you take another min, something that doesn't belong to the lulav tree, then it becomes a fifth min. I don't know if you've ever seen outside, you know, if you go in the streets here, you look around at what grows, you'll see something called kuzbara. You know, the Sfaradim are heavy into kuzbara. I forget what it's called in English, but it has a certain smell to it. And they use it as a spice. And the Sfaradim sometimes use it for smelling for besamin. So let's say, for example, I would pluck a leaf of the kuzbara, and I would tie my lulav and bind it with this kuzbara. So the Gemara says that that would be a fifth min, because the kuzbara is not one of the four minim. But if I take any part of the palm tree, whether it be the fiber, or whether it be something on the roots, whether it be the trunk or at the roots of the tree, that's not called another min. It's not called anything extraneous to the lulav. So as far as embellishing the beauty of the lulav, it might not be so beautiful, but then Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hadar in lulav. Correct? Rabbi Yehuda says a lulav ayavish from last year's kosher. So let's just review. The Gemara has two attacks against Rava. Rava presumes that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no requirement of hadar and lulav. First, the Gemara asks, why is it then that Rabbi Yehuda insists that if the leaves of the lulav tree get separated, you have to bind them? Isn't that for aesthetic reasons for hadar? The Gemara says, no. The reason you have to bind them has nothing to do with the pasuk hadar, which only applies, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in Ezra, but rather because of kafus. Then the Gemara goes on and says, well, how could Rava be right? You see that Rabbi Yehuda, when he asks what qualifies as a binding agent for agad, he requires that it be min lulav. It's got to be something that belongs to the lulav. And the Gemara assumes it means it's the leaf of the lulav. And the Gemara therefore comes to the conclusion that Rabbi Yehuda must require hadar lulav. The Gemara says, no! Rav already pointed out that Rabbi Yehuda requires anything that belongs to the lulav tree. If it comes from a different species and it's foreign to the lulav, then I have a problem with what? Five or fifth min. I violate Baal Tosef. Now at this point in the sugya, the Gemara attacks Rava from the exact opposite perspective. Rava says that as far as the Esrog is concerned, there was never an issue. There was never an issue. What do we require in an Esrog according to everybody?
Hadar.
Because the Torah describes it as priates Hadar. So the Gemara asks, Ube Esrog, mi boy Rab Yehuda Hadar? Are you telling me that if I have an old dried out Esrog, then according to Rab Yehuda, it would be invalid because of Hadar? Vatanya, we have a brisa that says our boss minim shebelulav, the four species that you take in the lulav kishem, just like ein pochsimehem, you can't drop one of the four and three is not going to do it. Kaso too ein mosifin aliv, you can't add a fifth. Lo matza esrog, if he didn't find an esrog, which was very common back in the day. Lo yavi, he shouldn't substitute another fruit. Lo parish. What did we say a parish was?
A quince.
Okay, now again, if you know what a quince is, that's very good. Rashi tells you what it is in French. I don't understand the French, and I don't understand the English. Yeah, somebody has to bring a quince into class. Okay. We call it show and tell, we used to call it. You remember that? Okay, so somebody has to bring a quince. Or, for example, lo rimon. Oh, that I know, because we have a rimon tree in our backyard. It's one of the most beautiful fruits. It has a crown to it that makes it absolutely stunning. One of God's beautiful creations. There are other things that are absolutely amazing about a pomegranate. The number of seeds in a pomegranate has a secret number to it.
613.
What is it?
613.
Right. V'lo dover acher. And not the fruit of your choice. I'm just curious here, Rabbi Bosse. Is anybody willing to tell me what the fruit of their choice is? If you didn't have an esrog, what would you take? Nobody has any favorite fruits?
Pomegranate.
A grape would not do because a grape is too small.
A kiwi.
An olive is also too small. A kiwi, excellent! A kiwi. The only trouble with a kiwi is that on the outside it has a peel. It looks kind of brownish, you know. Have you ever seen a passiflora? That has a nice color to it.
Lemon.
A lemon, okay. Lemon is a yellow color, so it looks a little bit like an esrog. So maybe you want to take a lemon because, I don't know, you know, it might remind you that you have to get yourself a... On the other hand, it's Asi Lemisra. You know, people are going to think you can take a lemon. Now, what's the story with a dried out esrog? So far what we know from this brisa are 2 points. Number one, we know that the brisa says that you need four minim, not five and not three. And number two, the brisa tells us that you cannot substitute another fruit for the esrog. Now the brisa goes on and tells us kmushim. Kmushim means it's partially dried. It's getting dry. It's on the way to drying. But it still has what? Lachluchas, moisture to it. Is ksherim. Everybody agrees that you can use such an esrog. Again, I wouldn't say it's the most beautiful esrog, Zekei Leviam Vehu, but an esrog, if it's only kamush, it's only partially dried out, it's kosher. But what about yaveshim? Yaveshim means that it's totally, totally what? Dried out, there's no moisture whatsoever. Is Rabbi Yehuda Omer af yevashim? Just like you told me that kmushim are valid, so too yevashim are valid. Clearly, he drops the ball on what requirement? Hadar. I mean, there's no hadar in an esrog yavish. A dried out esrog from last year is not hadar. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, not only that, Rabbi Yehuda strengthens his position by telling us a story. Now we're going to turn to Daf Lamed Aleph on the base. Maisa Dibnei Krachim. Okay, these are people who lived in certain areas where they couldn't find any date palm trees, so there were no lulavim available. Shoyu Morishim es lulaveim libnei bneim. They would What's the active of inherit? How do you say in English? To bequeath. Excellent. They would bequeath their lulav from this year to their children and to their grandchildren. Again, if I had to bequeath something to my grandchildren, I don't know if it would be a lulav. You know, it's probably quite dried out by the time it gets to the grandchildren. And why did they do so? The answer is because that's the only lulav they could get their hands on. But you see quite clearly that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a lulav hayavesh is kosher. Now again, this case of the Bnei Krachim, in my humble opinion, is not a very good proof. Because what are we talking about? A lulav, we're not talking about an esrog. You know, the Gemara wants to prove that Rabbi Yehuda drops the requirement of hadar in an esrog. And Rabbi Yehuda, you know, says that afyaveshim, even dried out a kosher. What's he referring to? Is he referring to a lulav or to an esrog? Maybe he's referring to a lulav. And I'll prove to you that he's referring to a lulav. Because the story that he told to support his position was that how you morishin lebnei bnei lulavin. So the Gemara says, Amar lo, they said to the Chachamim, Amar lahem, it depends what the gear says. He said to the Chachamim, Misham raya? You bring a proof from Rabbi Yehuda that in esrog, even if it's dry, he doesn't require hadar. Ein shas hadchak raya. I can't prove to you anything from a shas hadchak. Meaning that even if you assume that Rabbi Yehuda would qualify, would accept the validity of an esrog hayovesh, a dried out esrog, again, even though it's a little bit odd because the story that Rabbi Yehuda told was not about an esrog, it was about a lulav. But since the subject of this braisa was esrog, and Rabbi Yehuda made the comment that af yaveshim, that even it dried out is kosher, he must have been referring to an esrog. But that's only because of a concept called shas hadchak. What does shas hadchak mean? Correct, because what did they not have access to? Lulavim or esrogim, they didn't have access to it. Like my father told me about his shtetl where he was brought up about a century ago. If my father was alive, he'd be 105. He said that there was only one set of dalet minim for the whole shtetl. Okay, there were only 70 families, but there were 70 Jewish families in Plisa. So that's called shasat chak. Like the Gemara says that in Shabbos, that if you want to light the Hanukkah candles, what's called the Pesach Beisom Mibachutz on the outside, in order to publicize the miracle, there were certain times where the Goyim instituted decrees against the Ner Chanukah. They didn't tolerate the Chanukah. And the Gemara says, Mishasat Chak V'Elech, from that point in time and all, there were mitigating circumstances. They had to put the Meniach al Shulchan of Adayah, they had to put the candle on his kitchen table, on his dining room table. Ketani Bias, what we see here in this Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Yaveshim Ksherim. Now, if Af Yaveshim Ksherim means that because of mitigating circumstances, we're going to allow you to take a Lulav HaYavesh, then let's assume that the same halach of Shasat Chak would apply to an Esrog HaYavesh. My love, shouldn't we really assume an Esrog? That Rabbi Yehuda was pointing out that even an esrog hayovesh you're allowed to take v'shasat chak if you have no other option. Lo, the Gemara says, no, alulav. That even though it seems from the Braisa that Rabbi Yehuda would be machshir in a shasat chak situation, not only a dried out lulav, but even a dried out esrog, lo, the Gemara says, that's according to Rava, that can't be. Rabbi Yehuda requires hadar in an esrog, because the Torah says priates hadar. And the discussion of Rabbi Yehuda about Yavesh is limited to the case of a lulav would not apply to an esrog.
What's the halacha mean to think that it would be referred to an esrog? It's quite clear.
Oh, so Michael, here I have to give you a little bit of the light at the end of the tunnel, which is, I don't know if we'll get to it today, maybe we'll get to it today. The Gemara is going to ask the following question: if we can prove, and ultimately we will prove against Rav, that Rabbi Yehuda rejects Hadar even in the requirement of an esrog, then what does Rabbi Yehuda do with the word Hadar? And the Gemara is going to reinterpret the word Hadar. So let's hang on to our, you know, we, in the standard English translation of the Bible, what do we call that? Alright, today we have the odd scroll, what?
King James.
King James, but today we have the art school. You know, if you open up to Parshas Emor, I can almost guarantee you that it'll say Priates Hadar means a beautiful fruit. But that's not the way Rabbi Yehuda translates the word Hadar. He has a whole different translation of the word Hadar. So we'll get to that in a little bit of time, but I just want you to know, not to get too nervous, that the Gemara is going to address this question. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the word Hadar if he rejects Hadar even in the case of Esra? So the Gemara says, Omar Mar, for those who are interested in the structure of Shas, you should make a note that Omar Mar is almost identical with what's called Gufa. Gufa. Gufa means, and Omar Mar means pretty much the same, when we quote a source that was brought earlier, now we want to study it. So I don't know, have you gentlemen ever heard, Michael for sure, but have you gentlemen ever heard of Chappelle College, otherwise known as Darche Noam? Mm-hmm. So my good buddy is Rabbi Yitzhak Feigenbaum, Shlita. Those who are from Toronto will know him. He was the founder, the first menial of Darche Noam Chappelle. I'm going back a long time. He actually hired me, but I couldn't take the job. I only taught one course in Chappelle. And he wrote a book on these kinds of issues, you know, these structures, like what's the difference between Gufa and Omar Mar? So I don't remember what he says, but I'll tell you what I would say. Gufa is when we quote an earlier source and we have a contradiction to that source. Omar Mar is when we quote an earlier source and we analyze what was said. So that's Omar Mar. Omar Mar, we saw in the Braisa, Kishem Shem Poksimihem, Kach Eimosif and Alim, just like you can't subtract from the four minim and take three out of four, you cannot add a fifth min, Pshita. Why? The Braisa discovered something I didn't know? The Torah says Baltosif. The Torah says you can't add. So how many tzitzis do you put on your beged? Four. And how many nesinas dam do you do on the four kronos on his beach? Four. Whenever the number is required, you can't add, because that would be baltosif. So in the case where the Torah says take four minim, you can't add a fifth min, baltosif. You know, people think, oh, I'm going to add another min. You know, I'm going to beautify this mitzvah. You know, that's what none of Aviv, they brought a...
Can't you add to Hadassim?
Well, it could be that the numbers within each min you can add to. I mean, again, that's going to be a sugya later on. But as far as the min is concerned, you have to add another min, that's baltos. Pshita, says the Gemara. Pshita means my kamashmal, it means what did you tell me? The brisa has to be justified by some sort of chiddush. So the Gemara says, Hoil the Omer Rabbi Yehuda Lulav Tzarech Agad. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not enough to have four minim ksherim. There's another critical requirement. What's that? Agad. V'imaisi minach rina. Now let me ask you a question. V'imaisi minach rina means he's going to bring another min. Here I'm going to test you guys. Okay, to see if you can be sharp. Is Rabbi Yehuda good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? What do I mean? Is Rabbi Yehuda increasing the probability of violating Baltosif or decreasing the probability of Baltosif by requiring agad?
Increasing. If you're good with the...
It depends. You see, whenever I ask you a question, you always have to say it depends. I know my Rebbe, any time used to ask us a question, we knew that the answer was it depends, you know. So it depends. Where did you place the extra min? What are your two choices? Inside the binding or outside the binding? Clearly, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you place the fifth min inside the binding, you're in deep, deep trouble. That becomes part of the Netilas Lulav, and you violate Baltos. But Rabbi Yehuda opens up a very fascinating window of opportunity, that it's possible that you would not violate Baltos dafka according to Rabbi Yehuda, because he requires aga. And what scenario would that be? Where does he put the kuzbara? You know, outside of the 3 meter. It's like, for example, let's say I took a kuzbara, I plucked it out of the ground, and as I'm taking the lulav, I put the kuzbara on my head. Would that be baltosif? No. Baltosif means when I change the mitzvah itself. But putting a fifth min on your head, I mean, I'm just coming up with that example just as a pedagogic explanation, that would not be baltosif, because it's not integrated into the mitzvah. Rabbi Yehuda, paradoxically, opens up a window of opportunity to add a fifth min without integrating that fifth min into the very Netilas Lulav. Because what's Netilas Lulav according to Rabbi Yehuda? agad. And if it's outside the agad, it's not part of the lulav.
So why are you doing it?
Again, he's motivated to beautify the lulav. He thinks that he can outsmart the Ribbono Shel Olam. He thinks he's going to he's one up it. You know, he's got, well, Kuzma, I don't know, it's not so beautiful, but he found the beautiful minion, you know, his favorite minion, and he added it. So that's according to Yehuda, maybe you're allowed to add a fifth min. In what circumstances, what condition? That the fifth min is where? Outside the agad. Because if it's outside the agad, it's like he puts it in his pocket, in his lapel. You know, that's not Baal Tosef, Jerry.
But if the fifth is the essence of the agad,
that's a problem. If it's used to
But if it's inside the agad, is that what you mean by the essence?
It is that which
it's used to make the agad.
Yeah, no, but what he's doing is like this. I wish I had something. You know, here's his three min, right? And this is all bound together. Now he grabs onto another min here. You follow me?
Yeah.
So it's vertical, but it's not inside the agad. So take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: I might have had a half a min, and then according to Yehuda, I can circumvent the violation of agad by taking a fifth min. The maisi minach rina, and if he went ahead and he took a fifth min, right, another min, but what, he didn't tie it. Rashi says he didn't tie it inside the agad. In such a case, we apply a different principle, and what's this principle called? This principle is called Hai Lechudekai V'Hai Lechudekai. This one is alone, is independent, and this one is independent. They're completely separated. What do you mean they're completely separated? He's holding on to a Kuzbara, Ribbono Shel Olam. What do you mean Lechudekai, it's separated? It's not really separated, but the answer is according to Rav Yehuda, it's separated, because Rav Yehuda says, so what's a lulav? Agad. Kamash Malon.
Excuse me, but the Esther you hold together with the other.
Excellent, three. Excellent question, Jerry. But before we get to your question, let's just read the Kamash Malon. So, what's the Kamash Malon here? The Brisa wants to teach me that even according to Yehuda, who requires Agad, nevertheless, the fifth min is part of the Netila. Do you follow what I mean? Netila means he lifted up. Right, that's what we had that picture before. So once he lifts it up, even if it's outside the agad, it's integrated into the maisa netila, the action of netila, and therefore I cannot apply the principle of hai lechudekai. So it's integrated into the maisa netila, and I violate the iser of Baal Tosef. Again, in the hava minu ma'al d'teva, if not for this price, I would have said bavakasha. Well, I'm going to invite you to come up with another min. Be very creative about it. You know, they have every year here in Yerushalayim the contest for the most beautiful sukkah. You know, who could? Have you ever seen it? Who can create the most beautiful sukkah? Sukkah is the most artistic of all holidays. I myself was zocher to see some beautiful. I'm sure you all saw beautiful, creative sukkahs. You know, not with the classical posters that you buy down the street. You know, for 5 shekel, but really artwork. And lulav, you know, let's think about it. Let's be very creative in a lulav. Why not? You know, come up with a fifth min that really beautifies it. But you have a problem with Baal Tosef. So the Gemara thinks in the Hava, mean, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I can circumvent Baal Tosef. I can have my cake and eat it too. I can add a fifth min, beautify my netila, and not violate Baal Tosef because it's outside the agad. Says the Gemara, no. Even, that's what the Brisa wants to teach us, even though it's outside the agad, nevertheless, it still is a violation of Baal Tosef. Why? Because it's part of what?
The
Netila. So now Jerry comes along and he asks, wait a minute, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda requires agad, and therefore the Gemara thought in the Havamina that anything outside the agad is not part of the Netila, what are you going to do with the Esrog? The Esrog is not part of the Netila, according to this logic, because it's not part of the Agad. If my logical equation is anything that's outside the Agad is not part of the Netila, and therefore there's no violation of Baal Tosef in the Havamina of the Gemara, then I should apply that logic to the case of the Esrog. And then I've completely undermined the mitzvah of Dalet Minim. So the Gemara is going to have to take this up as a separate equation. Why is it that the Esrog doesn't have to be part of the Agad? Again, you and I might say because of the shape of the Esrog. Yeah, it's kind of cumbersome or complicated logistically to get an Agad that will also catch on to the Esrog. And if it's too tight, it's going to create you know, what's called a sedek, an esrog ha-saduk. Have you ever heard the word saduk? Saduk samach dalid vav kuv, it means that it has a crack in it. Like, for example, there's a whole sugi Rosh Hashanah, which I do on Wednesday nights here, about a shofar. A shofar that has a sedek to it. And the Gemara wants to know, can you plug up the sedek with what material? You're allowed to take shivrei shofar, because that's min bimino. You can't take something that's not min shofar. You can't use glue. The same thing applies to tefillin, by the way. Tefillin can't be saduk. It can't be cracked. And I don't know if you might have remembered this, but there was a whole scandal about 45 years ago. They discovered that one batemacher was using glue in his making of tefillin. And this became a whole issue. You know, there were people who had bought tefillin from that person for decades. Anyway, so in the case of an esrog, you know, if you tie down the esrog too hard, you know, too tight, you might have a problem with the esrog. But that's not going to be the reason. The reason why the esrog is outside of the agad is for a different reason. We'll see.
Kind of a general question. Why is the Gemara bringing this? It has nothing to do with the lulav being hadar or not hadar. So why is it bringing... Why is
so Amar, I'll tell you what it works. Amar Mar means the following. That... We've analyzed this brisa in certain parts, you know, to talk about, let's say, yovesh, if you have a lulav hayovesh, and what would be in the case of an esrog hayovesh.
Yeah.
But we haven't yet analyzed the beginning of the brisa. The brisa, if you remember, back on Daf Lamed Aleph opens up with the problem of altosif. Don't take a fifth min. Let's see the next part. The next part is Omar Mar. Lo matza esrog, he doesn't find an esrog. Lo yavi, lo rimon, lo parish, lo dover acher. He cannot substitute another fruit. Once again, pshita. After all, the Torah says priates hadar, and he's taking a quince. Is that what we called it? A quince? Ma'u de tema. I would have thought this is the havamina. This is beautiful. Ki hechi de lo tish takach toras esrog. Maybe it's a good idea to take another fruit. At least as a memory device. Remember the good old days. You know, Lamolika Yarn, you know, when we used to take an esrog. We don't have an esrog, so now Nebuchadnezzar taking a pomegranate. But remember, you know, if you don't take anything, you know, after a while, generations are gonna pass by and the whole mitzvah of Dalet Minim is gonna go into oblivion. Kamash Malan, listen to this. The Gemara says, does everybody know a little Yiddish here? Punk fakert. What's punk fakert?
The exact
opposite. Punk fakert. This is not a good idea. Don't take another fruit. What's going to happen to the next generation when they see that you're taking a lemon instead of an esrog?
They're going to think that's
the esrog. And therefore, kamash malan, dizimnin, dinafak churva. Let's translate this phrase. Zimnin, on occasion, nafik will come out. Mine means from it. Churva. Churva means a destructive kind of thing. You think it's a positive idea to create a memory device, and have a substitute fruit for it. That's the name. The exact opposite is true. Asil and misrach. At the end of the day, misrach means a kilkul. Kilkul means something bad is going to happen. You're going to undermine the whole mitzvah of Dalet Minim, because people are going to think, you know, the Torah doesn't say the word esrog. What does the Torah say? Pre-Eitz Hadar. Let's look at the Oskol translation. The Oskol translation says, take a fruit that's very beautiful. Well, I have my favorite beautiful fruit. And not only that, my Alta Zayd that I remember back in the old country, he took a quince, you know, and my Alta Bubba, you know, she took a mango, you know, and my Alta Zayd, my father's brother's uncle's side, he took a pomegranate, you know, so I don't have to be more religious than my Alta Zayd. They took this fruit, so I'm going to take this fruit. So Gemara says, "Nay, we're not going to allow you to take a different fruit. You think that you have a good logical reason, you're motivated for the right reasons to take another fruit, you can't take another fruit." So I both say again, if you happen to have a pencil, please mark down that we're up to Toshma Esrog HaYoshan. Okay then? And this way, in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow at 8:30, B'li Neder, we can start straight away, as they say. Okay, then anyone who wants to stay for questions or to learn together, whatever you'd like to do. But right now, Tom Vinishlam, we're finished. It's 9:30, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I try not to keep you beyond 9:30.
I have a practical question.
Yes.
So, So people use this, what do you call it?
The quince?
No.
Kaishalo.
So, which is made from the lulav.
Right.
Okay. Is that sufficient? And when you put that onto the lulav, or do you have to also bind it?
Because I've seen
people put strings around. I've seen one guy has a rubber band holding it together. Right. Now, is that getting a fixed speed?
So again, if you're adding a rubber band,
right,
then you're of the opinion that the kaishalach suffices as agad.
Right.
And once you have the agad, it's already high lechudekoy. Anything that you add outside the agad is completely extraneous. But if you hold that the kaishalach is not enough to have an agad, maybe because it's not tight enough, or maybe because it's on the bottom of your lulav and you need agad a little bit higher up, there may be various reasons why you don't want to rely on kaishalach, and hopefully we'll get to that. Then you have a problem if you're using a rubber band. It might be min b'sheino mino, and if it's min b'sheino mino, you might have a problem.
What if this friend didn't do it all the time?
Yeah, because they hold that once you've already bound the three minim, then anything that you add afterwards is only going to enhance that. So it's not going to detract.
That seems to be counterintuitive to what we just learned.
Okay, again, also, we're only at the beginning. We still have another 4 weeks, right?
Yeah, but also having Shulchan Aruch, he brings also three. He says duff the three rings at the top.
Yeah, that's based on Kabbalah, I think. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Can we find that? Do me a favor, because if anybody has time to learn a little Mishnah Berurah now, we can learn about this binding of the lulav. That would be very, very interesting.
If the source, Rashi brings right at the beginning of the paragraph, the source of Hebrew mitzvahs, Zekel Yom.
Right.
And we looked later, and there's another Gemara that's the source that all mitzvot actually have to be.
Correct.
So why does Hashem write, creates Adar, if that's also covered?
So I would tell you the following, that Zekeli Rashveyu enhances the mitzvah, but it's not critical to the mitzvah. When the Torah describes an Esrog as Hadar, it's telling you that there's a special requirement in Esrog of Hadar that goes way beyond. It's critical.
So it's Makiv. When Rav says critical.
That's a word I borrowed from Kudshin. I got used to learning Kudshin, and we always differentiate between something that's critical, like for example, Shvicha Shirayim. Remember, we spent, I don't know how many weeks to try to figure out if you take the Shirayim of the Dam after the Zrika and you have to pour it onto the Soda Mizbeah. Right, on the let's assume that the Shvicha Shirayim is on the Tzad Ma'arovi, because there's no Yisod on the Tzad Mizrahi, because of Shevet Binyamin and Shevet Yehuda, and that'll be. So we're always using the word critical. Is Shvicha Shirayim critical? And you're right, I got so used to the English translation I forgot that the word is Ma'akvin. That's the drawback of learning Torah in a different language. You, at some point, it's like taking another fruit instead of the Esrog. At some point, you forget that there's something called an Esrog.
There's a popular series of books called Game of Thrones, and they also made a popular TV series out of it. And there's one character that speaks only one word, Hodor.
Hodor. You think he learned to live
on that? No, the end result is it means hold the door. But every time we're learning this, it goes through my head.
All right.